I wonder if cats are that dreamy. That's one of the lesser known hits from Petula Clark. Gee, we did well finding that song, I'll tell you. A fascinating new study finds bald cats. Bald cats are friendliest. Moggies are the grumpiest. Researchers have ranked cat breeds from the most affectionate to the least, with the hairless sphinx coming out on top. Are you familiar with the hairless sphinx?
Never heard of it before, other than thinking Egypt.
Yeah. Those identified as the most unfriendly were non-pedigree crossbreed moggies, domestic short-haired cats, which scored poor marks for just about everything. Interactions with humans, that ignore their owners, that run away from strangers.
I take issue with your word fascinating, really. I mean, it's cats we're talking about here. dreadful creatures.
I should have gone to cats first, I can tell.
Sorry.
Are you a cat woman?
Am I a cat woman? I used to be a cat woman, if you say so, until I got my latest lot of cats who were just revolting, completely unfriendly, and I tell them that every day, and they hate me and I hate them, really. So,
are they moggies?
They're moggies, there and I got them from the pet shop, but they tell me that they're supposed to be socialised with humans in their first 6 weeks, otherwise you're done for, so clearly they were left in a cage. But we decided to speak to experts about this, because we train all the vets in New Zealand at Massey, and so we rang one of our alumni and said, what do you think? He, you know, deals with cats every day. And he said there's absolutely no difference in whether they're pedigrees or bald or moggies or whatever. He said they're just the same. And he was actually questioning the validity of this research, because he was saying if you look at the research, it says owners were asked, and people who own pedigree cats have invested a lot of money in them, and they're much more precious about their cats. And so they're much more likely to say, oh, my cats are so lovely and friendly, when perhaps they're not really.
Oh, that's an interesting opinion. This is in the Journal of Veterinary Behaviour. And as Kaz says, the owners were asked, so they might be biased. But anyway, the owners of Maine Coons, Persians, Burmans, Somalis, Siamese, Russian Blues and exotic short hairs mostly said their pets were very friendly. But the moggy owners. But why would moggy owners talk down their cats, though? Wouldn't they just report accurately whether the...
Oh, they're just being honest.
Yeah, they are. That's exactly right. They're being honest. Whereas if you spent $1,000 on a pedigree, you're more likely to say, oh, no, it's fantastic.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
Yeah. I don't care how much you spent, they'll still steal your breath when you sleep.
Why do you dislike cats so much?
Oh, they're awful things. I mean, they rip up your furniture and cough up hairballs everywhere. And
that's true.
But they're not all like that. I used to have cats who never did that. It just depends.
I'm getting concerned here. How many cats are we talking about?
129 cats from 14 breeds were surveyed.
Yeah. How many does Cass own?
Yes, I thought that's what you were inferring. Yeah. I was one of those strange women with 19 cats my house smelt.
The rule is more than two equals crazy cat lady.
I can't possibly comment.
And unfortunately, once you've hit that number, that status can never be revoked.
Oh, okay. I think this is defamatory, actually.
Yeah, I think so too.
No, my wife is also a crazy cat lady. She's totally come to terms with it. She's cool with it.
Cats won't like you, you know. Cats know. Cats know.
No, cats don't like me.
No.
That's fine.
Okay, if you're ever trapped down by the Auckland waterfront late at night, you watch out.
So violent crime and cats, two stories back to back, they're connected.
Yes, well, there are cat colonies out there, you know. Yeah. They'll know you.
Do they carry fullies as well?
I'd never heard of this expression, fullies, before, until Greg Newbold said it. Okay, so that's cats, believe it or not. Now, what would the panel like to talk about? On board with us today are Cass Carter and Steve McCabe. Steve, what's on your mind?
Well, not cats. Let's get that out of the way right away.
Okay, then.
Yeah, sorry. My wife and daughter have a cat. I just want to be like clear. I don't.
What's its name?
Oliver.
Oh, it's a nice name.
Yes. Yes. It's a terrible thing. I mean, it's weird. I have to feed this thing every night, and he's so dense that when I get his bowl and I'm putting food in it, he walks in front of me on top of the bowl, so I can't put food in his bowl.
Yeah, he doesn't like you.
No.
And, Kes, what are the 11 names of your cats? Steve,
I don't even call Mr. something, because that's when you get really worried. Well, what's on my mind is, well, I'm a teacher, and so it's the working conditions of teachers has been exercising me considerably lately, especially since our current collective agreement is due for renewal very shortly. And so we've been involved with negotiations with the ministry, and that's never going to end well, unfortunately. The ministry have offered us once again a somewhat derisory offer for a collective agreement once again. And I can't help but feel that they're not really negotiating in good faith. You do get the sense that the current government have no interest in actually promoting teaching as a profession, which then kind of makes you wonder how much they're really promoting education as a concept. We were offered a collective agreement that this time round has again, a lower than inflation rate of inflation pay rise, which basically means an effective pay cut. They also then tried to impose upon us 42 different clawbacks on our working conditions. These are things that would not only see our salary effectively going down, but also mean that our working conditions also go down quite considerably. And it's obscure things, but they're real. It's things like, for example, parental leave. Women who take maternity leave, for example, and then who lose the child either through stillbirth or through a miscarriage would be required, under the terms that the ministry were trying to offer us, a mandatory 3-week unpaid leave before they're allowed to return to work. Where that came from is beyond me, but that's what the ministry is trying to foist on us at the moment. So
it's quite bizarre, isn't it?
Well, the entire current government's policy toward education, I would say, counts as bizarre, to be perfectly honest, but that's where we're up to.
Separate contract, Steve.
Mm.
Charter schools.
Wash your mouth out, Mr. Mora.
Would you teach in a charter school?
Oh, that's a very, very good question. Depends how many millions they were offering me. I would say
so you can be bought.
Name my price, yeah. I would consider setting one up of my own. But no, I don't think I'd want to work in one. I mean, as far as I can tell, charter schools are, among other things, a blatant attempt at union busting.
All right, so the teachers are unhappy, so there's a long route to go down before.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we're sort of working on an offer that might involve these 42 clawbacks being withdrawn, and that might end up going through simply because, you know, it's the best we're going to get out of this particular government.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Steve McCabe, thank you. Cass Carter, what's on your mind?
Well, we've just been looking at, you know, I've just been thinking about sort of the year in review. It's nearly the end of the year and what's happened. And we, MassEHU, runs an online competition each year to judge the best quote of the year. And I've been one of the judges to judge the to set up the finalists, and then it goes online and people vote on it. So sorted out some of the finalists yesterday, and I thought I'd let you know some of the quotes.
Yeah, please do.
It will remind you of some of the things that have happened this year. From Melanie Reid, it's not a good idea to pick on a girl from Southland, when she was referring to ACC manager's treatment of Bronwyn Puller when she was accepting a television award here.
Yeah.
No one owns water, from John Key, about the Māori claims to water rights.
Yep.
Then a rather concerning one from our finance minister, estimating the financial value of selling state assets. I just want to emphasise that it is not our best guess, it's just a guess. MasterChef, of course, has been big this year. Your dish was a car crash, but all of the occupants survived, from Josh Emmett.
Oh, that's not a bad one.
That was quite good. I remember him saying that, actually. It was so cruel. Bob Parker saying, I come to Wellington and I'm scared to be here, which is Rich from the Mayor of Christchurch.
Yeah.
This one's got a swear word, so I'll have to beep it. But it's from Ewan Gilmore, who says, oh, beep, I can't afford that, after his doctor told him he was going to live for another 40 years. Yes, I could. I thought think about that myself, actually. People of the most questionable backgrounds, they're the types that at times can make a major difference to some of our youth and disaffected people. That was Willie Jackson challenging the decision to revoke Mike Tyson's visa to New Zealand.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And then, of course, you've got the whole Kim.com saga, John Banks saying, I don't remember, and the wee rap called Amnesia. He is John Banks. He got the vote, and that's why Key keeps him afloat on his cabbage boat. And John Key, of course, responded, I did not come up the river on a cabbage boat. So, and the final one that I love, that's just a recent one from Paula Bennett to Jacinda Ardern in Parliament, the Zip It, Sweetie.
Zip It, Sweetie.
No quotes from the All Blacks from last week?
No, surprisingly silent, actually.
I wonder why that would be.
So yes. Can people vote online?
Yes, they can. And you're going to ask me how, and I don't know.
How?
Go on to the Massey website.
Okay, and yeah. You can find it from there.
Yeah.
At first, they were with you about cats, but no, the cat lovers are now texting in bulk. Cats don't bark, they don't smell, they wash themselves, they bury their feces, they don't dig up the backyard, dogs don't purr.
No, they don't.
I can give you more reasons if you'd like.
No, they don't steal your breath either.
4:45. A female member of Hawke's Bay's legal profession has promised to boycott the annual Law Society Christmas party because it's being held in a club that doesn't allow women as members, and the club's president has confirmed the Hawke's Bay Club, established in 1863, had never had a female member. Women can attend functions hosted at the club, but cannot enter the members-only bar, except on Saturdays.
Do such places still exist?
I know, it's hilarious.
It's a throwback, isn't it?
Yes, but do you mind? Because Barbara Arnott is going to come on, the mayor, but do you mind that there are still gentlemen's clubs like this? Does it bother you?
Well, I think, first of all, your language needs to be questioned. I mean, we think about gentlemen's clubs, we think those wonderful, dark, smoky rooms in Pall Mall in London with blokes sitting there with their copies of The Times and silent waiters in white gloves bringing them their glass of port. I don't think that's quite what we're talking about here.
No.
I don't know.
But
it's
the legacy of that.
I think maybe trying to emulate that. But yeah, does that belong in today's society?
Well, even if it's an anachronism, does it bother you that it still exists?
Well, I mean, speaking as a privileged male here, I'm fine.
You're fine.
I could join. It's not a problem for me.
Yeah, Kez, yeah. Look, we don't see the issue here.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, what's your problem?
Well, yeah, what I thought was hilarious was that the president of the club actually said there are areas of the club where you can entertain women, which was almost slightly disturbing, really. So, but I think, I mean, it depends what the nature of the club is. And generally, I would have thought that it's for business people to talk to each other. And so, yes, I would mind if I was a businesswoman and in Hawke's Bay and I wanted to just network, I suppose, with other business people, then how come all the blokes get to network with each other and the women don't? It's not particularly appealing to me, sort of dark, smoky bars, but I guess they aren't allowed to smoke in there anyway. But it's just having the opportunity to do what men do, I suppose, really.
Okay.
Mm. It's very 1950s, I
suppose. So you're not up in arms like Alison McEwen of Langley Twig Law. I mean, you're not exercised by it as she is.
Well, I do think it's wrong. It shouldn't exist. I think the only thing is if you had a single gender club would be something that was appropriate for a single gender issue, I suppose. Say you could have a club if it was a men's support group, because a woman wouldn't be appropriate for a woman to be there, likewise for a women's support group. But if it's just a general club for getting together and, you know, chatting and things like that, then I don't think it's appropriate to have a men's club.
That's a good argument, but I mean, I suppose a counter argument would be, you look at the men's club at Lord's, the men's only club at Lord's. I've never been there, but I've had it described, and you would think that's just plain sexist, because there are a lot of good seats that women could sit in, and women might want to go watch the cricket as well. But this is a bit different, because you have to make quite a decision to go to this particular building, don't you?
Yeah, you think so. It sounds like the people who've chosen to join this, you know, this is what they want.
Yeah, it's what they want.
And,
okay.
Let's
ask the mayor.
Is there an alternative to this? Is there a women's club? Is this the only club in town? Is there nowhere else one can go?
I think Napier's got a few more facilities than this.
It seemed like a decent enough town when I was there, yeah.
Napier Mayor Barbara Arnott joining the panel. Barbara, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Eminently common sense from the men here.
Oh, you really? Okay, tell us what you think. Tell us what you think, Barbara.
Well, I mean, for me, it's never been an issue. It has come up periodically over the years. But, you know, I've said before, it is a private club. And, yes, privileged people join it, and they are men. But then not every woman could join it anyway, only the rich. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they pay into the fabric of the club. It's 150 years old. It survived the earthquake, one of the few pre-earthquake buildings of that stature we've got. And I'm just pleased that it exists so that they can, that people pay into that. And it keeps that lovely heritage building alive and used. And it's used for many, many different functions where women and men go and probably don't even think about whether women or men are, whether women are allowed to or not.
So it really isn't an issue. So it does host functions, so it's only a men's only club sometimes.
Well, it's men join it, and the good thing is that they pay so the rest of us can enjoy it when we want to. And that seems eminently fair to me.
But can you enjoy it when you want to? Is it only when you're invited in?
No. They've got a fabulous chef there, and if you want to host anything in there yourself, I mean, I just phone up and say, look, I've got I want to host 20 people there, or Art Deco weekend out on the verandas and that sort of thing. I've hosted ambassadors and people like that. So anybody can use it, and it's used for weddings. And I mean, it is a private club, but the men actually pay so that everybody else can enjoy the premises.
Okay, I don't think we knew that. So you could take a gathering of women there, Barbara.
Yes, I certainly could, with not one man in sight. Yep.
Okay.
But Barbara, what if the women wanted to pay to, you know, maintain the heritage building?
Yeah.
Join?
Well, that I wasn't actually sure, and I still haven't talked to the president of the club to find out whether they're actually excluded. I know some time ago somebody made a fuss and tried to join, and it was probably about 20 years ago. So somebody could test the system and see whether or not whether they could join and pay and for the upkeep. And that's fine. I mean, I don't know what they would say. They'd have to take that seriously and consider it in their executive, I presume. But as the president said, why would anyone want to join?
Yeah.
When you're a woman, and that's how I feel too. There are plenty of other clubs in Napier, by the way, that women and men, there's the Napier Club, there's the Tarradale Club, there's many other clubs like that club that men and women can join.
Are there any only women's clubs?
Oh, absolutely.
Are
yes,
there are women's only gyms.
Yeah, and there's business after five too that the Chamber of Commerce put on, so that if you're a woman and you want to network in business, that's the sort of place to do that, I think. That's more open, and it works every month. They have one of those. So there's plenty of opportunity for people to do the networking in a whole lot of different facilities around town.
Well, right, Barbara, quickly.
Go back to your assertion that simply because it's historical and it's heritagey, that makes it acceptable. Let's just recast this. Imagine this club was suddenly whites only, and there's suddenly it's policy that those Maoris aren't allowed to join. Would it be acceptable then? So, well, they can come along when we bring them in, but other than that, no.
Is that a fair analogy?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, Alison made the point in the paper today. I don't know whether it was serious, but she talked about the vote. But, I mean, I just don't trivialise things like democracy and the vote and racism with the point about a private club saying, we're a private club and we only let members who pay a certain amount, and I think it's quite a lot, to join. I just think, well, that's what you want to do. You go and do it.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Barbara Arnott. Surely the comparison with racism would be more apt if it was derogatorily meant. In other words, if they believed in the patriarchal rights of men and the superiority of the male gender. Otherwise, it's a different kettle of fish, isn't it?
But who's to say it's not derogatorily meant? Do
you really think that they have these attitudes, though?
Well, why else do we keep the little ladies out, then?
Oh, because they're blokes getting together. You know, having a bit of a natter.
Okay.
So, no, I'm postulating a hypothesis.
So recast that in terms of race instead of sex, and you say, well, why are we keeping the dark people out? Well, we white people like to get together and have a natter. That's not going to fly.
All right, I'm going to leave that there. Not that I'm convinced of your analogy, but I mean, other people
may well be.
Now, quickly, if Kate and William have a firstborn daughter,
she wouldn't be allowed to join the club.
Will she become? She wouldn't be allowed to join that club in Napier, but would she be allowed to become Queen of New Zealand? Because everyone's talking about, because of the nature of the morning sickness, what if they have twins and a girl is delivered first before a boy who succeeds to the throne? Are you au fait with the rules of primogeniture?
Well, of course, in England, we're obviously intimately familiar with these things.
I thought you might
be. Of course we are, obviously, yes. Well, as it stands, the law is very... I thought this was actually in the process of being...
It is.
...updated. As it stands, very simply, males take precedence...
Yeah.
Over females in birth order. So twins is a red herring. If it's fraternal twins and a girl pops out first and then a boy, the boy is first in line further up the line.
Yes,
than the girl.
And New Zealand is organising the changing of it through CHOGM. But in fact, hadn't they, Cass, better get a move on? Because you would think they probably need to change this if it is twins in the next 8 months.
Unless we just find out what she's having. Can she not just have an amniocentesis and then it will save us all this pain?
I don't know if that's the arrangement.
Sorry, but it would be much easier.
I know, you can change the laws of succession after the birth. There's no urgent rush.
But that would be...
This child will not ascend to the throne, quite possibly even in our lifetimes. I mean, we've got Charles to get through first and then William.
Nevertheless, it still has an impact on this child's life. How
true.
They groomed everything they do right from the
God,
day they're born.
I think so.
True.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Now, I better get Neville Gibson on because times are pressing, and figures uncovered by the Labor MP Chris Hipkins show Treasury's spending on contractors has soared under a National-led government. In fact, the numbers represent a 1,000% increase over 5 years. 1,000%. The government's economic advisor is supposed to play a leading role in delivering cost savings as part of the government's Better Public Services policy. So you've probably seen these numbers. We've discussed the rise in consultants before. In fact, the rise in consultants from memory was being discussed when Helen Clark was leading the government too. So it's been an issue for quite some time. What do you think, before Neville comes on, and I'm sorry to rush the discussion, but what do you think it's symptomatic of? Kaz, you first, why are we hiring so many of the consultants in all the government departments?
Oh, this drives me mad. It's just cyclical. Basically, what happens is they decide there's too many civil servants, so they get rid of a whole bunch of them, but they don't actually change the way civil servants work or the expectations. So there's a whole hole to fill, so it has to be filled with consultants. So they start hiring consultants, and then after a while, everyone throws up their hands in horror and says, too many consultants, and they get rid of them, so they have to hire staff again, and then there's too many staff, and it goes around. I've lived in Wellington long enough to see this over and over again. The other thing, though, is that consultants bring an area of expertise that might not be within that organisation at the time. So there's two different kinds of consultants, ones that fill the gaps and ones that are experts.
Okay. Steve, just quickly from you.
Well, generally speaking, I mean, it's like any piece of equipment. At what point does it become more cost-effective to own rather than rent?
Yeah, no, that's nice and crisp. Thank you. Neville Gibson, editor of the National Business Review. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Do we honestly, do you think, Neville, get better value for money hiring outside contractors?
Well, I think the fact that there are many more consultants around today than there were, say, 20 years ago, and this is both in the private and public sector, shows that they do fulfil a role. As Kaz says, it's a bit cyclical, and it's a good way of getting the headcount down. But just looking at these figures, the Dominion claims is 1,000%. When you hear a figure like that, which of course is an oxymoron, you can't have more than 100% really. But anyway, the figure is boosted enormously by the costs of the forthcoming float of Mighty River Power, which involves share brokers, people preparing prospectuses, marketing, PR, you name it. And that's going to cost a good, you know, 15 million. Well, over the previous years, the figure has gone from about 1.5 million to 4 million, and it's been up and down. And we all know that actually spending in the public sector on headcounts has actually been going down. And Bill English was pleased to announce today that during the October figures, public spending generally, including entitlements and so on, went down 1.5%.
It's across a lot of departments, though. You know, you wonder why you need to spend $30 million with consultants in DOC. Is this a lack of faith in the institution of the public service because of its, never spoken about, but perceived moribundity? I mean, nobody admits it, but that's
I think a lot of it is, you know, it's horses for courses in the specialist jobs. If you look at what the Treasury breakdown they gave to the Dominion Post, I mean, most of them are around about 100 to 200,000. Well, that's basically the salary of a reasonably senior public servant. But for that, I suspect they got more than just one person working on the job. And there's a lot of reports come out of the public sector, like on the film industry and so on. It's far better get some accountants to do that sort of work than pay top accountants' salaries to public servants.
I suppose so, but you don't think the underlying it is a feeling that you get better, brighter, crisper, sharper, more enterprising people when they're not sitting on comfortable long-term seats? You don't think that's what the Nats think?
Oh, no, I don't think any of these consultants think that they're going to have their contracts for anything more than the specified time.
And no.
They'd be more worried about not keeping their jobs and be working harder, I suspect.
I may have asked you a slightly confusing question. But does it also highlight the badly run nature of some departments, Neville, where you get laid off 1 week, you're back on the payroll the next because they can't do without you? This is bizarre.
Well, that's probably anecdotal and possibly has happened in the past, and obviously you read comments like that, but very seldom do you get people with concrete examples of that, but I can't say that doesn't happen.
All right, thank you, Neville. Well, that was a swift discussion, but nevertheless, we got through aspects of it. Kaz Carter, very nice to have you back on the panel. Good luck with your quotes online through Massey University. You can vote on Kaz's quotes. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Steve McCabe, good luck with your negotiations, mate.
Thank you very much. We'll need it.
thanks, everybody. We are back tomorrow. Checkpoint follows.